the way you write on the board, the fact that we can record what you're doing, and learning management systems. We have a new learning management system this year called Canvas. It's not especially different than Angel. It's got some differences. Yeah. From a user standpoint, it's not particularly bad. That is, from a student standpoint, it's not particularly bad. From a teacher standpoint, it's sort of. So we'll also use PowerPoint. Number four, guess what? I post all of the PowerPoint lectures up on Canvas, and you're free to print them out and bring them to class. Got a place for you to write. Now, why would I do that?
For the exam?
There she is. Hi, Kathy. Why would I do that? Well, first off, how many of you are really good note takers? How many of you really pay any attention to what's being said while you're taking notes? Okay, I am sort of a different animal. I can take almost stenographic notes, but don't ask me what you said because I'm so concentrating on how to get it down that I get it down. I have to go back and read the notes in order to figure it out. And what chaps me beyond belief is I'll go to one of these presentations and the guy has got this voluminous slide that you could not transpose on your life in the amount of time he's going to give you, and you're writing like mad, you're not paying any attention to what he's saying, and he flips, you're to item four and there's six items on the slide, and it's gone. How many of you have had that experience? Do you really learn much that way? Do you really enjoy it? Not me. So you've got them, and then you can make notes about, you know, this sucks. You know, whatever. Is that right, Kathy?
Yeah.
Good. My whole goal is to make this course as fun for you as possible. Yes, there are materials. Can I cover everything in class? Let me talk a little bit about that. When I first started teaching, back before many of your grandmothers went to school, everything was dependent on the teacher pushing the information into the class. And so what you did was you lectured as hard and as fast as you could for an hour, hour and a half, whatever. And woe to the person who was not a good stenographer. I still got some of my notes, believe it or not, from my early college years. I go back and look at them periodically to see what I missed while I was taking the class. You have a textbook. Now, how much fun is it to read textbooks?
Not that much.
Textbooks are crammed with information, right? The authors go out of their way to see how much information they can put on a page because teachers expect it. Oh my God, you got to cover everything. Well, two things. I picked a textbook that has for this course that is good, well written, and the authors have not tried to cover everything there is to know about the subject. Got a kind of a story to tell you. The third year I taught, at San Antonio College, the faculty had picked a textbook on the reputation of the authors. None of them had ever seen the book. It wasn't going to come out until about August. And it was the Truman Redford Hacker Weston Wood. I had had Emmett Redford. He was a tremendous scholar on public administration. And what each of those five authors had attempted to do was distill everything they knew about their field into their allocated set of chapters, or allocated set of space. The book was over 1,000 pages long. Fine print. It was unreadable. It was totally unreadable. I had students coming to me with tears in their eyes. I spent half the night last night and I couldn't even finish chapter 3. I said, "That's all right, honey. You and I are in the same boat." So that was when I decided that textbooks don't need to cover everything. And this one covers the essentials. I call this it's not a bikini text. It covers a little more than just the essentials, but it's well written. But what is the QEP program, Quality Enhancement Program, that Galveston College has adopted for the next 5 years? Does anybody remember? I mean, it's only posters all over the campus.
What is it, Read Deeper?
Anybody?
Read Deeper.
Read Deeper, right. What's involved in reading deeper? You mean you just sit there and look at it more times every day?
No. You basically read between the lines.
You're trying to extract stuff. All right, I'm going to try to help you a little bit. Now, you were with me last year, right? By the way, I did that one time. I asked a student. I said, now, you were with me. And she came up after class and said, you embarrassed me. I said, why? She said, everybody in the class thought I failed. I said, let the record reflect it was a different class. So what you will have posted up on Canvas is a set of reading test questions that help you extract the information. And in fact, I tell you what page the particular information is on, so you don't have to search. I don't believe in wasting your time. Now, you were with me, right? What is the incentive to do the reading test questions?
Do the review.
I can hear you.
You do the review.
You get to use them when you take the test. Oh my God, is that cheating?
No.
No, you did it, right? Let me tell you one of my pet peeves. Okay. What we have done to the American educational system is a travesty. We are focused so much on students taking tests, memorizing, regurgitating, and promptly forgetting for a test that we've taken the fun out of learning. Would you agree with that, Miss Sargent?
Yes, sir.
You know, just memorize, regurgitate. My God, I got this big test. How much of it do you remember 6 weeks after you took the test? Unless you've got an extraordinary memory, the answer is probably not much. How many of you have ever seen a magic slate? One of those little things with a plastic sheet. I have one in my office. I started to bring it to class. You write on it, and then all you have to do is just pull the little plastic sheet up, and everything disappears. Right? You've seen those? I can almost hear that ripping sound every time you finish a test. Don't need that stuff anymore. So, what if you actually extract the information and write it down? Brain research indicates that the portion of the brain that has long-term memory, that really consolidates information, is pretty much the same part of the brain that you use when you write things down. So guess what? If you extract the information, summarize it, and write it down, what are the chances you will remember it when you get around to a test? Pretty great. I had a young lady in my class last semester who came up after class was over, after the semester was over, and said, you're kind of sneaky. Okay? What do you mean? She said, I thought this was so great, being able to write everything down, and I never even had to consult my notes one time when I was taking the test. So, I confess, if that's sneaky, I'm sneaky, because I want you to be able to learn. Fair enough? You may not use the textbook when you take the test. That's a crutch. But your class notes? Check. Your textbook notes? Check. Fair enough? Has it made much of difference in terms of the overall grades for the class? The percentage of students making A's has been pretty consistently about the same as it was before I did that experiment, but the percentage of students who move from, say, the high C to the B category has improved, and the number of students who move from the D category into the C category was materially better. I had, of 100 and some odd students I had last spring, how many F's do you think I had?
One.
And they were working at it, big time. It really hurt me to see them actually make an F. To me, it's not the student that's failed when that happens. It's to some extent the teacher. All right, now let's get some things. Any questions so far? I noticed that you have the third edition of the textbook. I have posted the reading test questions for both the third and the fourth edition. All right. There's not significant difference in the book, with one exception. The chapter on the legislature has been completely rewritten. I have a copy of it down in the library if you want to use the more recent version. Or what I'm going to give you in class basically covers what all the differences were. And I'll have to, you do not need to bring the textbook to class with you. Fair enough? But if anybody has it, you will notice in the list of acknowledgments, yours truly is in there. And I sort of materially tore the author's rear about the way they dealt with the legislature. They made some serious mistakes. And I let them know about it. Well, they say that no good deed ever goes unpunished, right? So I got a call from the textbook publisher the other day. Would you be interested in doing the instructor handbook for the fifth edition, which is going to come out? I said, not too sure about that. All right, let's have some fun. Bring up PowerPoint. Oh, there we go. Wrong one. I always like to start with that cartoon. Come on, open up. This is from Non Sequitur. And it says, the answers to all of life's mysteries. It's a newsstand. He says, I have to read? Yeah. Come in. Oh, that's the one. That's the same one. Never mind. Nope. Now, how many of you will feel this way at the end of the class period? Maybe excuse, my brain is full. There's another great Far Side cartoon where this guy's standing pushing heavily on the door. Have you seen that one? Standing there pushing heavily on the door, and it's something school for the gifted, and right above the sign it says pull. And he's trying to push it open. Always make me wonder about, you know. There's some people who are gifted in different ways. All right. Now, some of you have seen this already, and I apologize to you, but I can't change my life story. Don't want to. Now, have you ever stopped to think? Now, you're not to the point in your life yet where you go back and think, now, if I had just done something differently at this point in life, how differently would my life have turned out? Now, at age 19 to, 20-something, that's not likely to be a big deal for you yet. But when you reach, You get past 70. There's a few of those places you go, you know. But let me tell you my story. Notice I had hair and dimples. I still have the dimples. They're just under the beard. My family traveled rather extensively when I was young, and I got to go with them. They didn't stick me anywhere. Wasn't any place to stick me. Do you know what 460 air conditioning is?
Yeah, the window. Roll down the window.
That's where you roll down all the windows and go 60 miles an hour? Yeah. Got a lot of 460 air conditioning when I was a kid. But we mostly traveled in the northern part of the United States. I remember going across Arizona when it was 105 degrees outside. That was not fun. That's my little brother, only he's not so little anymore. Now I'm going to skip a few years. I went to high school. I've already given you a hint that I was kind of a nerd in high school. National Honor Society, president of the Experimental Chemistry Club. You know, one of those guys that none of the good-looking girls would date. Went to my 40th high school reunion. Went to every one of my high school reunions, but I got to thinking, 40th high school reunion. All of those cheerleaders. Man, I'm glad they didn't date me. I have a tacky line there. I said, their pom-poms have sagged somewhat. But at any rate, went to Lee Community College, Lee Junior College for 2 years. I say with some degree of seriousness and honesty that I got an education at Lee College and a degree from the University of Texas. Not completely true, but comes close. Had some outstanding faculty. got my master's degree from the University of Texas. That is Senator Chris Cole. I helped manage his campaign for state representative when I was 15 in East Harris County. And they say sometimes good deeds do get rewarded. Later on, when I was a graduate student at the University of Texas and needed a job, I'd been working at the University Co-op for $1 an hour, and that was really not a whole lot of money because I had gotten married and had a wife to help support. So Senator Cole offered me a job. I was the first administrative assistant ever employed by the Texas Senate. And the reason they decided to give him, actually they called me a secretary, but it was an extra secretary, was that Senator Cole was blind. Truly remarkable man. He'd been blinded by a Japanese hand grenade on the invasion of Tarawa. He had been a high school dropout, joined the Marines when he was 17 years of age, blinded at 20 or 21, came back, had been pretty seriously wounded too, rehabbed, got his GED, his bachelor's degree, his law degree, was elected to the Texas legislature, was an outstanding legislator and an outstanding senator. And I was the first administrative assistant, and that is the senator's desk on the floor of the Senate during the Senate session. Administrative aides do not get anywhere near the kind of flexibility that I had back there in 1963. Because everybody's got one of them, and they can't have them all running around pretending to be a senator. But it was a great education. I went back and worked for him in 1965, more on that later on, and then in 1967 worked for Senator Chet Brooks while I was working on my doctorate. Again, no good deed. I had helped research the issue of vocational technical education. They created a interim study committee, more about what interim study committees are. And I was named the staff counsel or staff director for the Senate Interim Committee on Vocational Technical Education from 67 to 1969. But since the job didn't pay very much, I also taught full-time at San Jacinto College. It was kind of an interesting experience. I was elected County Democratic Chairman in 1980, served in that position longer than anybody has served since or before or since, 10 years. I kind of reminded the story of the village idiot who kept beating his head against the wall, and somebody said, "Why do you do that?" He said, "Because it feels so good when I stop." That was President Carter, and right behind him, Lieutenant Governor Bill Hobby. Oh, that little gal in the polka dot dress is my daughter. She got to see a lot of stuff. Wife and I like to play dress up for Dickens. We have four really great grandkids. This is a kind of an old picture because getting them all together at one time is now like herding cats. We are avid tandem bicyclists. And I thought I would, you know, let you know what the wife was, what the horse was, and what the other ride was. And you know, what goes down must come up. That's why they put gears on those bicycles. This is a thing in Illinois. And of course, we have to end it with Texas. Fair enough. So it gives you a little feel for maybe who this strange guy is. Now let's talk a little bit about the syllabus, and then we're going to take a little bit of a look at Canvas, and then I have one other thing to close the class with, which I think you will enjoy, which I hope you will enjoy, whatever. Let that get loaded. It takes a little while to load a big file. You can figure out why I did not go into the music business. How many of you have thus far used Canvas? Okay. It's not particularly difficult to use. And the easiest way to get there.
It's the same way with how we want to end with the
e-learning section. Is to go to the Galveston College homepage, and up here where it says e-learning, just click in. Now you can remember https://gcinstructure.com. It's hosted off campus. It's not hosted on campus. Fair enough? And that's the reason we're using GC on the Instructure thing. Herrick and Ike taught us that maybe we didn't really want to host that on our servers here in Galveston. We were fortunate. Our servers didn't get destroyed. But had they been damaged, we still would have been able to conduct everything on the off the course. Now, everybody knows how to log into your Whitecaps account. Use the same information to log into Canvas. Now, obviously, mine's going to be a little bit different than yours. And what you will do, your page will come up with your Texas government course in it. You'll notice that I have a bunch of stuff already posted for you. And the Meet the Professor. This is what I had done in class, but I also have that posted on YouTube. You get to
Good
get
day.
A chance.
I'm glad to meet you. Partly.
Blah blah blah. I really didn't mean to cancel that out like that, but you know, brain dead. How many of you know about hard passwords? Not hard to remember, but hard in the sense that nobody's going to guess them. Mm. You got a good hard password?
No.
Let me show you an easy way to create one. I'm jumping, but it's useful. Think up a nonsense phrase. Something like, fish can't ride bicycles too much, and then just use the first letter and the number two and the exclamation point. Think up a nonsense phrase that you can remember, and that way it's not complicated, but it's something that's almost impossible to crack. When I put some one of these passwords into one of the things, it comes back weak password, strong. It says exceptional password, you know. Hot dang. So somebody can't steal your password. All right, we go to the course. And I urge, recommend, encourage, and suggest that you do this. I will be posting things, articles that are useful, but obviously don't have time to cover it. Things like this one that came out in 2012 and about Texas water crisis, Texas water issues. Fair enough? And of course, there are the reading test questions for you. See the little panda riding the bicycle? That means just hold your horses, we're downloading it. Boom. And you can just download it directly onto your computer as a file. If you click on the download, it'll let you download it as a file. I put it up as a rich text. How many of you know what RTF stands for? Rich text format. Yes? Okay, you want to tell them?
Rich text format. What?
Where did it come from? Well,
rich people.
About 15 or so years ago, the various software purveyors like WordPerfect, which is no longer in business, Word, blah, 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 had incompatible formats. So if somebody sent you a document in Word DOC format and all you had was WordPerfect on your machine, you couldn't read it. So they got together and came up with a format which would be interchangeable, called rich text format. It doesn't have all of the bells and whistles that the proprietary format has, but it's a hell of a lot better than just having to look at it and go, I can't download your file. I put everything up in rich text format, so no matter what version of Word or what version of whatever you happen to have, you can download it. There's nothing fancy about it. I would appreciate it if you send me stuff if you would do the same thing. When you go to Save As, it'll give you an option for rich text format. Use it. Makes life a lot simpler. All right, is there anything that you think of that we have not covered yet? So let me tell you what we're going to do for the next, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then I'm going to turn you loose to play in the traffic. We're going to take a visual tour of Texas. How many of you have traveled in Texas extensively? So if I talk about the Piney Woods or the Post Oak Belt or the High Plains, immediately it snaps into your mind as to where you are.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to do a little bit of a tour here. Now, one of the things that we will learn, and we're going to deal with this in the very first class period, download the notes so you don't have to spend a lot of time scribbling, is the regions, rivers, features, and cities of Texas, the physical format.
Yes.
Now, why? That's Texas geography, Mr. Waddell. Why would we want to have to learn that? Well, you know, we don't want to learn anything we don't need to know, right? Has the geography impacted the politics of Texas?
Yes.
Can you think of several different ways? First, does the size of the state have a tremendous impact? Yeah. Is the geographical diversity of the state a significant factor in the politics of Texas? Are the water problems of East Texas the same as the water problems of the High Plains, or the same as the water problems of the Mountain and Basin region or South Texas? No. Is the population density and distribution a factor? Are the sociological differences, the racial, the ethnic, and economic differences within the state of Texas such that they would create interesting political issues? So, would it make sense? This is a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer it unless you want to. Would it make sense to just jump into talking about the government and politics of Texas without having looked at some of the underlying factors that will cause Texas to have some somewhat unique politics and somewhat unique economic, social, and cultural problems? Well, a lot of teachers do it. The textbook does. But we're going to spend the first big chunk of time getting to know Texas. Now, do I expect you to memorize all of that data? Just have a familiarity with it and you'll have your notes, you'll have, you know, your crutches. But let's do the fun part here. I was extraordinarily fortunate in my junior year at the University of Texas to have, for a course in Texas geography, Dr. Lauren Kennemer, who was the foremost geographer of the state of Texas. He not only was a fascinating teacher, he was a great scholar as well. And this particular set of geographic regions are essentially what Dr. Kennemer put together. And there are 13 of them all together, and I'm going to ask you to kind of know them, but you will have the advantage of being able to kind of look them up. We'll start with the Gulf Coast Prairies. And of course, we might as well start with the 61st Street Bridge, 61st Street Pier, pre-Ike, Bolivar Lighthouse. This is eye candy. I kind of warm you up. The coastal plains over near Smith Point on the Smith Bolivar Peninsula. The beaches of Galveston, that's Beaches, and the dunes. Oh, we don't have any economic or political issues related to the dunes, do we? Or the beaches? That was a rhetorical question, and you're all laughing, you know. This is Rollover Pass over on Bolivar Peninsula. What is this straight line of water running there called?
Coastal Canal, Coastal Water.
Intercoastal Waterway. Yes. Dredge for a lot of reasons. First off, it's a whole lot cheaper to move things by barge than it is to try to move them by ship or rail. And the chemical petrochemical industry of the Gulf Coast obviously needs to move huge amounts of volume of materials relatively cheaply. No? Let's roll over past. It was dredged in the 1950s to freshen East Bay, that is to reduce the salinity of East Bay, to be interesting enough, because it was almost like a dead sea. Well, Texas Parks and Wildlife has decided that they're going to close Rollover Pass, much to the unhappiness of many of the Bolivar Peninsula people, particularly in the tourist industry, because it's creating A, problems for the intercoastal waterway. They have to constantly dredge it. And secondly, it has had some interesting impact on the salt marsh grasses over there. But I'll let you research that issue on your own. And how many of you have discovered Google Earth? Anybody? This is the picture of it, recent picture, Google Earth. Kind of a side story. When we evacuated for Hurricane Ike, we were, of course, extremely concerned about whether our house had been destroyed or something, and there was nobody to contact. And my sister-in-law, who lives in Iowa, called us up and said, I went on Google Earth and looked, and your house is still there. She said, but there's this big black thing in the backyard. I said, yeah, that's a swimming pool. there were little crabs floating around swimming in the pool. Took me a while to get that cleaned up. Deer Islands, North and South Deer Islands, Galveston Causeway, Bio Vista. Now, I'm also going to be teaching some interesting little points as we go along. What is this in the foreground for Bio Vista? Salt marshes. In the 1960s, Congress passed the Coastal Zone Management Act, which outlawed doing what they did with Tiki Island and Bio Vista, which is that dredge and fill canal system. Any idea why? This destroys these coastal marshes. Kathy, what's the value of the coastal marshes? I don't know is a perfectly legitimate answer. Anybody? The marshes serve two extremely valuable, well, three actually, extremely valuable functions. One, they are the kidneys of the bay. What happens to you when your kidneys fail? You either A, are on dialysis the rest of your life, or two, you die, or somebody gets a kidney transplant. Can we kidney transplant the bay? Not easily. Secondly, they're breeding. They are the nursery grounds for many of the species like shrimp, crab, and fish. No nursery grounds, no fish, no crabs, no shrimp. We just celebrated the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, what significantly exacerbated the flooding which caused the flooding of New Orleans. Granted, it was a Category 5 storm with 125 mile an hour winds, but that wasn't the first one that had ever hit that part of the coast, and yet it was devastating to New Orleans. What had happened since the last major storm that had gone that way before Katrina? You want to guess? You can take the context and sort of guess where I'm coming from. Many of the coastal zone marshes south of New Orleans had been destroyed, and they were no longer there to buffer and soak up the floodwaters. The land has also subsided as a result of rather massive oil and gas production south of New Orleans. There'd been a subsidence. So you do two things. You cause the land to subside, and you destroy the buffering of the marshes, and that's where you get that 20-foot surge that devastated New Orleans. Okay, let's keep going. How many of you figured I was going to throw a little politics in with this? So you can't help it, it's just his nature. Keep moving. Tiki Island, about 1970, or after the next major hurricane. Now, Dickinson Bow, this is I-45, you recognize it. Before, there was never a problem with flooding this particular subdivision, but it flooded with hurricane when a Hurricane Ike came ashore, with the rain and Tropical Storm Allison before that. And the reason was all of these subdivisions that had been built upstream from it. Texas does not have any controls over the development of subdivisions and shopping centers and whatnot in sensitive areas where you can cause flooding downstream. Politicians in Texas are eventually going to have to face that particular issue and do something about it. This is the Katy Prairie west of Houston, not tremendously developed at this particular point in time, but if at the current rate the development of the Katy Prairie continues as it has, downtown Houston will be in the same potential problem as New Orleans was. Now, there was a great flood in the early 20th century that put water 5 foot deep in downtown Houston. And they built the Bear Creek Reservoir out there. And if you've ever been out and seen Bear Creek Reservoir, I've mentioned Bear Creek Reservoir, and one of my students said, I went out there and there's no water. No, it's a flood catchment basin. Tropical Storm Allison dumped its 22 inches of rain downstream from the Katy Prairie, and the Bear Creek Reservoir. If it had dumped 22 inches of rain, maybe the Bear Creek Reservoir would have been able to have contained it, and they wouldn't have had all of the flooding in the Texas Medical Center. But if development of the Katy Prairie continues apace with no controls, the next hurricane or next tropical storm, Allison, may put water in downtown Houston like it did New Orleans. All right, the Piney Woods. This is the only bicycling picture in this whole series. My wife took this picture over my shoulder. How many of you have ever been to Big Thicket? Don't recommend it this time of year. Hot, steamy, lots of insects. But come late October, early November, and the mosquitoes have all gone to bed, it's a nice place to be. East Texas, many of the old buildings in Galveston were built with lumber cut from the Piney Woods. Now, I'm a sucker for lakes and sunsets, but the one thing you need to know is there are no naturally occurring lakes in Texas greater than 10 acres in size. All of the lakes in Texas greater than 10 acres in size are man-made. And there are costs associated with building lakes, not just the cost of building them, but ecological cost. Now, as we move west, and we'll look at the reasons for this next time, as you move west in Texas, the rainfall becomes less significant, and so you go from, and the soil morphology changes. There are three things, and this is not on a test, this is just, you know, this is some information you can learn and not have to put it on a test, okay? There are three things that determine what kind of plants can live in an area. The soil.
Climate.
The climate, let's give it a big one. The rain. And the longitude. Which affects the climate, of course. And we could, I guess, if you throw a fourth one in, elevation. Now, this is not a question concerning marijuana, but is West Texas higher than East Texas? Yeah. Is far north Texas considerably further north than, say, San Antonio? Would you expect to see some changes in plant morphology as a result of that? If you set out to drive from Brownsville to Canada, when you get even with the northernmost border of Texas, you're almost 40% of the way to Canada. There's this great little postcard that says, the sun is risen, the sun is set, and here I am in Texas yet. If you drive from Beaumont to El Paso, you would appreciate that. So what's the post-oak belt look like? Well, it's been extensively altered by the hand of man. That's one of the lakes in the background. Notice all those square fields. Square fields are not natural. But here's a sort of a pretty picture. I took this right off of Highway 71 on the way to Austin. And as you move further west, it's going to get drier, isn't it? Therefore, that's going to change the plant typology. Also, the soil changes. We go from what we find in deep East Texas to a thick, black, waxy soil. That's why it's called the Blackland Prairie. Now, I was visiting with some friends of mine who live in Austin, and they said, from San Antonio to Austin now is one big suburb. When I was a student at the University of Texas back in the 1960s, early 70s, there were some breaks. The Grand Prairie, Fort Worth is located on the Grand Prairie. Dallas is located on the East Cross Timbers, just east of the East Cross Timbers, on the boundary between the East Cross Timbers and the Blackland Prairie. Getting drier, isn't it? East and West Cross Timbers. Now, by the way, those are not ACAC up there. Bye-bye. That just happens to be some stuff that got on my slide and messed it up. I've been trying to Photoshop it out. Low plains. High plains. There is a very definite distinction between the low plains and the high plains. It's called the Caprock Escarpment. Now, later on, I could discuss with you what the reasons for that are, but really and truly, this is not a Texas geography course. We're just doing kind of an intro. Any of you ever been to Paladuro Canyon? The last stand of the Comanche Indians in Texas. Now, I'd be honest with you, I don't think I would really like living out on the high plains. I've ridden across the high plains. I've ridden across most of the high plains on a bicycle. And up around Wyoming in particular, it's a little bit on the boring side. Oh yeah, I've seen that already. There's a grain elevator in the background. Extensive high plain agriculture irrigation from the Ogallala Formation. We'll learn where the Ogallala is. Are there any private problems or crises with the Ogallala Formation right now? They've been pumping it dry. It's fossil water left over from the Pleistocene. What kind of economic situation is going to occur on the high plains when finally you can't have irrigated agriculture, which is it and petroleum and natural gas are the mainstays of the high plain economy? Not just in Texas, but also all the way on up through Kansas. Edwards Plateau. Pedernales River, tributary of the Colorado. Anybody done the Bevel's Backbone, by the way, out here in San Marcos? It's kind of great bicycling. You learn what the gears are for. This is one of my favorite places, the Little Blanco River. How many of you have tubed the Guadalupe? What a difference 6 months makes. This is the Enchanted Rock, Farm to Market 965. Great little road to go down. I got to tell you a side story on that. I promise we'll get through real quick. My wife and I were doing Farm to Market 965, and it's a really good plunge. You can get up a good on our tandem bicycle. We were, I think, at about 45 miles an hour or some such. There's a cattle guard halfway down across the road, which we didn't know about. Now, my wife sings kind of high alto, low soprano, but I've never heard her hit E above high C but one time, and that's when she saw that cattle guard. Willow City Loop, down in a caldera of an ancient volcano. The Llano Basin, which is an uplift of granitic batholith. South Texas Plain. Lots of irrigated agriculture in the South Texas Plain. What's the guy got in his hand? It's a sizing ring. Citrus continues to mature. The best place to store citrus is on the tree. And when they reach appropriate size, We don't have to guess. If it won't go through the ring, pick it. And in the last area, the Mountain and Basin region, when you cross the Highway 290 bridge over the Devil's River, you're into the Mountain and Basin region. Now, don't think my next comments are a little macabre. They are. If you have an inkling to commit suicide, let me recommend this bridge to you. It is very high. The water is at a constant 50 or so degrees. So the fall will probably kill you, but if it doesn't, hypothermia will catch you. And the rattlesnakes and all the bluff will probably get you. But the reason I recommend it rather than the Galveston Causeway is it's so far out there that you'll have an opportunity to change your mind. 90% of suicides are spur-of-the-moment decisions, and you'd have about 12 hours to think about it. Not the sort of place that you would do parachute training in. In the spring, the ephemerals, the little blooms that grow in the few areas of moisture, are beautiful. You never know what's likely to be watching you, however. These are the Big Ben blue bonnets, a subspecies that grow up about waist high. Does anybody seriously think you could build a wall between Texas and Mexico that would be valuable? This is the Boquillas Canyon. On this side, you're in Texas. On the other side, you're in Mexico. Santa Elena Canyon. And there is a modern ferry we took to go across to Santa Elena, Chihuahua, Mexico. It's an interesting town. Not the poorest town by any means. Big Bend National Park, south rim of the Big Bend, the window of the Big Bend. And as the sun slowly sets on our tour of Texas, have we figured out that Texas is pretty diverse? Would we expect the politics of Texas to be somewhat diverse as well? I don't know how accurate the following statement is. It's a statement I make. There's only one other state in the Union that has as much diversity in it as Texas. What do you think it might be?
California.
Geographical, economic, social, racial, ethnic diversity. You have to put all of them in there. Any one of the states might make one of those categories. All right, have a good one. I will see you Wednesday. And what is your assignment between now and Wednesday? Start on your reading test questions.